388 Atlantic Avenue between Hoyt Street and Bond Street in downtown Brooklyn. The evening will include dinner and wine and an autographed copy of my best-selling book, Sune's Gift. I'm looking forward to both meeting you and empowering you.
Want to learn the basics of journalism but aren't sure where to start? The Independent, New York's free radical newspaper, will host a community reporting workshop on Saturday, September 24th, from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons at 388 Atlantic Avenue between Hoyt and Bond Streets in the Borough Hill section of Brooklyn. If you'd like to attend, please email contact@independent.org or call 212-904-1282, and we will send you an application. No prior journalism experience is required. However, space is limited. Obtain the tools to be able to report the reality of your community.
The 15th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks is a major historic milestone for the world. Marking this occasion will be a two-day symposium called 9/11 2016 Justice in Focus on September 10th and 11th at Cooper Union. Speakers include renowned researchers, architects, engineers, whistleblowers, and attorneys. For full details, go to 911justiceinfocus.org or call 510-900-8340. This historic event will open insight into the deeper reality of 9/11, application of law, and momentum for a movement whose time has come. Again, that's 911justiceinfocus.org or 510-900-8340. Truth and justice will prevail.
Hi, this is Donovan, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in
this
New York.
This is Julian Assange, and you're listening to Off the Hook at WBAI New York.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood.
Well, here we are at our brand new time. Off the Hook is on the air at 8 o'clock and as uncoordinated as ever. This is Emmanuel, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello, hackers.
Oh, my God. And Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Trying to enter the password so we can get Bernie, and the password isn't working.
Now it is.
Now it's working. Great. Just enough to make us look completely idiotic here. Yes. All right. So we have Bernie on the phone, or what's...
We will momentarily.
All right. Yeah, so what's going on?
So the wow.
I think your headphones are too hot.
Very loud.
Yeah, well, turn your headphones down.
I think this is a dry run. I think people will give us the benefit of the doubt. Now just everybody take a breath. Let's calm down.
This is completely our fault.
No,
this is our fault.
There's a lot of fault. There's a lot of blame. There's a lot of fingers to point and certain ones you pick. But
we had 45 minutes to set up. The last show was on tape. So, okay, we have Bernie on the phone now. Bernie, you there?
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. He sounds beautiful.
And of course, there's no phone either. That's a whole other story. So we're talking to Bernie on what? Skype now?
Yes, indeed.
Hang on. Why isn't your microphone working?
We are on Skype. Okay.
But he probably called Skype from a regular phone.
No. Actually, you guys called out from Skype using something called Skype Out, which interfaces Skype to the phone network.
All right,
you can call any phone number.
That signature Skype clarity just isn't with us. So definitely it's going, it's getting down converted as it enters the public phone system.
Yeah, but the signature Skype clarity is like talking to Mars because there's such a delay.
Well, that's true. And you know, latency and delay are big factors in when you want to have a natural conversation on a telecommunications platform.
Okay, rough landing. Here we are, our new time zone, our time slot, time zone might as well be, 8 o'clock on Wednesdays from this point forward. I like it better, actually.
Hey,
it's more relaxed.
We've proven it can be done. We can appear and start the show.
We barely proved that, but yes, you're right.
But it is a little later, I think, and this is what I suggested earlier. This is like the after sort of meal hour, maybe, right? You know, that in between before everybody goes to sleep. So
who goes to sleep at this hour? Really, people are preparing to go to sleep. I guess so.
I know. I had to prepare to be up this late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Usually, you guys know. Usually, I fall asleep just immediately when the show ends.
Uh-huh. But most people fall asleep at the beginning. But
hopefully, if you're a new listener at this hour, you can integrate us into your evening listening experience, and you'll enjoy all the things that we have to say about technology and telephony.
And if you're a fan of the Personal Computer Show, stay tuned because once again, they're on our tails. They come on at 9 o'clock.
Yes, they have been retained, and they're. Persevering and continuing on the great programming that they provide.
It's kind of like daylight savings time, except we're jumping the gun and moving everything ahead an hour or behind an hour, something like that. Anyway, this, in case you're unfamiliar, this is the program dealing with technology, hacking, individuality, and controversy and things like that. Did I leave anything out?
Yeah,
I think you covered a lot of it.
All right, good.
That covers it in general.
And since we have no phones, that means we're going to try all the harder to take phone calls, and we're going to figure something out a little bit later on. That's part of the reason why we had a rough start this time, because this board is a real challenge.
Yeah, I was integrating our Nest of wires to make that possible. We'll wait until we're actually ready to do that to set it up.
Hornet's Nest of wires.
Oh, it's Emmanuel? Crazy.
Yes, Bernie.
I have an update on the phone situation.
Oh, please tell us.
Not on the actual phone lines, but on what's holding them up, which is $20-some thousand in back bills of Verizon that have not been paid by WBAI. So I'm continuing to work with our general manager, Berthold Reimers, and Pacifica's national technical director, John Alma. And we are in the process of obtaining access to WBAI's online account so we can download PDFs over the past so many months' bills, find out how the bills got so high. Basically, as you may have heard from last week's show, the telephone long-distance and international service were all configured for Verizon, who charges the highest rates allowed by law. So like a single call to South America was like $150 or something, just ridiculous rates. So as soon as we get online access, we can do an analysis of the bills and recommend to Berthold Reimers, WBA's executive director, an executive general manager, what is a good low-cost, long-distance international service that we can use with the existing phone lines. And then the bleeding will be stopped. I'm hopeful the BAI can pay the phone bill, and then we can get the phone lines reconnected and not have to bleed money.
On that subject, Bernie, is it fair to expect BAI to pay exorbitant rates for what's essentially a ripoff? $150 to call South America? Come on.
Yeah, I agree, but I'm sure Verizon would come back and say, well, you chose that and you agreed to these rates, so you're suckers.
Nobody in their right mind would choose that. Basically, I speak from experience because we're going through something similar with the one phone line that we got for the Hope Conference that took Verizon a month to install. They sent us the first bill for that phone line before they even succeeded in getting a dial tone. And of course we told them to disconnect it immediately after the conference. But, they've been ripping us off in all manner of ways. For instance, they signed us up for a long distance program that we never asked for, where they charge you a minimum amount. If you don't use it, you have to pay $50 for nothing. Never asked for that, and they never told us that. This is their business model. So, yeah, I think we have some standing in contesting that.
Well, I certainly think WBAI tried to contest it because it's like $20,000, which should have been closer to, you know, $2,000 or $100 or $1,000 or something over the past several months. But, you know, the most important thing is to get these phone lines hooked up again but we'll be going over the bills over the next week or so and figure out what's going on and figure out if any of our listeners have suggestions as to alternate long-distance providers. These will have to be used with a POTS phone line. So voice over IP directly is not going to – we don't have SIP capability at the studios. So just regular phone line, alternate long-distance and international carriers. Anybody has suggestions? We'll be researching it ourselves as well, but if our listeners want to get involved, they can help.
This is just giving me a huge flashback to, say, 20 years ago when long-distance calls cost a lot, and you know this program in particular was talking a lot about massive phone bills and things to do. I mean, would it help if I built another red box? I mean, I'm a bit rusty, but...
we can have a phone line, pay phone line installed at the studio, and then you could just red box from it, and then we wouldn't have to pay long-distance charges. Mm-hmm. If only they would still work, so I hear.
Yeah, it sounds like this. The forensics, though, is the first part. Actually, going through and looking at what they were saying. That's kind of where we're at with our bill, because it's just absurd what they do. In particular, I think it was like 10 cents in charges or 11 cents in charges.
It was under 25 cents total charges for long distance bill.
But they round up.
But they it's a minimum usage fee again. Kyle, you dealt with them personally. They never mentioned this. They never said it. We asked specifically because we had been hosed in the past by AT&T.
Right.
I remember, Bernie, you were involved in this once, and you called your phone to test the line. And that one call to your cell phone, which was right there, was something like $5 because we didn't have...
Because it was 215 area code phone number.
Yeah, it was considered long distance, by AT&T, long lines or whatever. But the point is we didn't choose a plan with them, so they penalized us and charged us an exorbitant amount. So we asked specifically, let's not do that this time. Can we have a plan where, like most people in this country, we only pay a few pennies for phone calls? And they gave us that, but then they gave us something else as well.
They just round up to the nearest $50, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And honestly, Bernie, the exhibitor services number that you had used in the past, they never answered that. I called for like a month straight trying to get them. No, that nobody picks up.
When I set that up 2 years ago, they would always answer the phone.
No, that was garbage. That was complete garbage. Yeah. No, it did not work.
The other thing they did, they came to the hotel to put in a phone line.
Oh, the labor charge. Yeah.
Yeah. They basically came to the hotel, and they were supposed to leave the hotel when there was a dial tone, and they left, and there was no dial. They didn't even check their own work, and they came back again after we said, hey, guys, you know, you might want to finish what you started, and they came back a second time, still were not able to figure it out, came back a third time. They charged us a service call for every single one of those visits. Can you believe that? So this bill is just, you know, we told them to cancel the service. I bet they still have the service in there, too. I just bet they do. It's insane. So, yeah, this is why I think that we have some standing against Verizon because of their business practices.
Yeah, and the labor charges, we're still deciphering it. Like what you're about to be doing for the station is going through the forensic part of it, looking at the bill, see what they're trying to get away with. And I would suggest anybody going through this, especially with BAI, do make a lot of phone calls to them, Bernie. And it's really an opportunity to get a lot of it reduced. And there may be a lot more possibility once you engage in that and actually have the conversation and just be persistent and call back. That's usually the best way to find someone who's willing to help you out and maybe use whatever power they have to reduce it, because they're usually flexible if you present it in a sort of positive way, or like, oops, this was messed up kind of way. But yeah, it's definitely their fault.
Or you're ripping us off, and we're going to go to the Public Service Commission. That's my approach.
Well, no, that's the other angle.
But I think we all owe Bernie a debt of gratitude for even attempting to undertake this. And by all of us, I mean all of the listeners to WBAI, because this affects the entire station. So thanks for taking this on. You must be out of your mind.
It's fun.
It's fun. It is fun. That's true. As we mentioned, we're hackers, and we do this kind of thing.
I can't believe it. Even the labor charges in the hotel, it's like the hotel itself was willing. They were running their own lines. They had their own people that were talking about running lines. And It sounds like the Verizon guy just showed up and was like, oh, you guys are doing a line. I guess I can bill that out as my work. But he's just there to check that they got it from the frame in the bottom of the hotel up the top. It's so crazy how bureaucratic and like territorial entities work together or don't, and just pile it on and nothing really, you know, and ultimately become more of a hindrance than actually helpful.
I'm picking up some chatter from some of our listeners who are asking why in God's name in this day and age, I hate questions that start like that,
yeah,
do you still get a landline in the first place? It's so much easier to do it a different way. Bernie, you want to take this, Kyle, and then Bernie, maybe you can chime in as well.
Okay. Well, my short answer is that it's the feel and the sound of it is unique, and there are certain attributes and things you run into of the public switch telephone network that sort of become cleaned away when you use modern telephony systems, things like voice over IP or other hosted services or your own stuff. It becomes a lot crisper, as we've heard on Skype. But also, it is the fastest, most direct way to access the public switch telephone network, which itself is an old sort of legacy system that we still have access to. And it's entirely different from a production standpoint, what it sounds like for us to make a call, getting actual dial tone, not synthesized dial tone, things like that, you just can't replicate when you're on stage doing something with social engineering. And it is as close to where someone might be in the field. If they were social engineering someone from a payphone, that payphone's not necessarily Skype or voice over IP yet. So it's very close to what it would be like to use that network in the field or from wherever you may be social engineering.
Bernie, anything to add to that?
Emmanuel?
Bernie?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
See, this is an example. You didn't have that with the old phone system.
In this particular topic, there was a fascinating talk at the 11th Hope back in July called Sunset or Evolution of the PSTN, meaning the Public Switch Telephone Network, by a great speaker, Fred Goldstein. So if you go to hope.net and go to schedule and find that talk, it's a really interesting hour of telephony geekdom. You can hear from how the old phone systems worked back in the day to where things are going, and is really the public switch telephone network evolving or sunsetting? It's for you to decide after you hear that talk.
And you can hear all the talks from the most recent Hope Conference, the 11th Hope. Go to hope.net and go to where all the talks are listed under schedule and click on the audio, and you'll be able to hear everything. And we've got videos available, too, in various means, methods, and things like that. Amazing conference. We had a great time, learned a lot, and met all kinds of cool people. Okay, so we have a few stories that we want to focus on tonight, and hopefully we'll take some phone calls in just a little bit. But where shall we start? I like this story, Rob, because you forwarded this to our list. Apparently, we all know Warner Brothers is very concerned about piracy of its movies and content of various sorts. This is a story that comes from our friends over at Torrent Freak. They say Warner Brothers is vigorously trying to prevent pirated content from showing up in search results. But in doing so, the movie studio has shot itself in the foot. Recently, Warner asked Google to take down several of its own pages, claiming that they are copyright infringing. Yeah. Now, the movie industry has gone head-to-head with Google in recent years, demanding tougher anti-piracy measures from the search engine. According to Warner Brothers and other major studios, Google makes it too easy for its users to find pirated content. Instead, they would prefer Google to remove sites such as the Pirate Bay from search results entirely. Kind of, you know, Orwellian, I guess, rewriting.
But also what's idiotic.
Very idiotic.
I mean, the domain still exists.
Uh-huh. But they just make it so you can't find it.
Uh-huh. Or you switch search engines.
But anyway, with help from its anti-piracy partner known as, how do you pronounce this? Vobile? Vobile?
Yeah.
V-O-B-I-L-E?
Oh, they sound serious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers asked Google to censor several of its own URLs from the search engine. They have a screenshot taken from a DMCA notice. It lists the official Warner page of the 2008 Batman movie, The Dark Knight, among various reported pirate links. The apparent self-censorship is not a one-off mistake either. A few days earlier, a similar DMCA takedown notice targeted Warner's website, claiming that the official page for The Lucky One is infringing Warner's copyrights. Of course, Warner only hurts itself with these erroneous takedown requests. Unfortunately, however, WarnerBros.com is not the only quote-unquote legitimate domain that's being targeted. The same notices also target a link to the Amazon store where users can rent or buy a copy of The Dark Knight. In addition, it targets a link to Batman Begins in the Sky Cinema store as well as the film's official IMDb page. Wow. In other words, Warner is inadvertently trying to make it harder for the public to find links to legitimate content which runs counter to their intentions. Luckily for the Hollywood studio, Google is there to save the day. The search engine spotted their mistakes and decided to take no action for the Amazon Sky and IMDb links. However, the Warner Bros. Com URLs are still under investigation. So that's awesome. That really is awesome. But it goes to show that the left hand does not know what the right hand is doing.
Yeah.
With these huge corporations.
And they're not well thought out. Their plans and executed sloppy. Sloppily, and God, Warner Bros. That sounds like their enforcement team, like who shows up to like enforce you
Warner
know?
Bros. I didn't know that was their side. Yeah. I thought it was Warner Brothers. Was
We're the
official.
Warner Bros. They you owe us. Probably,
yeah.
Yes, Bernie.
I think it'd be great if a really good script came across some Warner Brothers producer's desk and for a film called Pirate Bay. And they did this show, they did this whole movie, and they spent millions of dollars to promote it and whatever. And then, like, everybody trying to find it couldn't because they were blocking.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny?
Maybe not pitch that to Warner Brothers, but definitely pitch it and definitely make it. And
actually, they should make it and then give it away.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, get with the times, you know? Like, that is just...
That does go to show how bonkers the current media environment is, where people are trying to lock down the content that they want people to see. There's an entity called NRK, which is a TV network in Norway, I believe, and they were the first national TV network to put DRM-free torrents of their own material online, just for free. And they did this with an announcement that I have here, because it's such a great quote. If you want control of your content, you need to lock it down in a vault and never show it to anyone. We gave up control of our content the day we started broadcasting. Basically, they go on to say the only way to control your content is to be the best provider of it. If people want it on YouTube, then you should publish it on YouTube or in a system that gives the same experience. If people want it on BitTorrent, then you should provide that. If you do it right, people will come to your official publish point and you'll end up with more control. And
very true.
Yeah,
very true.
They're the ones who seem to be doing it right and not shooting themselves in the foot or trying to label themselves as criminals stealing their own content.
Yeah, and they realize that it's a distribution method.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, too, because it's not always about the cost of buying a DVD or downloading something, because they react the same way for free television programs that are available to anybody with a TV antenna. They come after you if you download it from some place they don't want you to download it from. It's all about control.
Well, if you download it and then host it,
Well, even point to it, you can be targeted by that.
Yeah,
it's something that they need to come to terms with. They need to realize that things have changed and that it's possible to get material in all different ways. What you said, Rob, about locking things in a vault. That's what they do. That's what a lot of these companies do. There are movies and TV shows and news archives that are in vaults, probably in New Jersey or California, and nobody can see them because nobody has paid for the rights to them. So they would rather these things deteriorate and eventually just be destroyed in the fire or something than to share them. Who profits from that? Who benefits from that? Absolutely nobody. It's corporate greed.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do if somebody ponies up.
Yeah, but, you know, they make it really impossible for people to even do that because how do you even know what's there?
Yeah, there's no proxy reference archive so that you can go through and find out what they actually have, which is really important if you have a collection of a lot of material.
See, I think this should be part of the whole rewriting of copyright project. Mm-hmm. When a work is made, it should be mandated that that work has to be available in one form or another. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my biggest issues is the TV show WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yes.
Great show about a radio station. But because somebody didn't pay a huge amount for the music they played in the show, what they've released on DVD is completely different. It's music that has absolutely no reference to the subject matter, or it's just fake studio musicians. And it's not what the work was originally. I maintain the work as originally produced has a right to be preserved and shared. And if these guys can't figure out how to make the maximum amount of money on it, that's their problem. But the work should never be be punished as a result of that. Once you make it, it's done. It's out there.
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest enraging things about the current media environment is there are things that are deteriorating physically that cannot even be licensed out, even if you have the money, because nobody knows who owns it. Mm-hmm. Just somebody owns it, going by the numbers and the years that have gone by and stuff. But nobody can tell who owns it. And so there are books that are decaying, things that were printed once, maybe 100 years ago, and or films that are decaying and things like that. And no one can preserve the things because no one's allowed to, because they haven't paid the mysterious owner of the material.
Yeah, which oftentimes they don't even own the material. Like, witness Splotchgate with us, mm-hmm. Where they tried to tell us that they owned a piece of art that they didn't even own. Yeah. Just because they used it once. So, yeah, lots of times that's going to be completely inaccurate.
Our friend Jason Scott at the Internet Archive knows this well. I mean, there, you can go on there and find all kinds of old pieces of software, computer games, things like that, that are emulated in your browser so you can play them now. But the original discs these things were on have long since decayed. The only reason we have copies is because they were ripped by the wares scene back then, which was people trading things around without paying for them. And that's the version that we still have, because that's the version that was able to survive format changes, that was able to survive just in circulation until somebody could lock it down or not lock it down, but rehost it in a manner that's useful. So it's a huge example of, like, there are images of computer chips that have long since decayed or that nobody has, just these things that would not be available if people played by the rules, and the rules are broken.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. Okay, another rule that authorities would like to get control over, we talked about search engines, we talked about erasing things from search engines. There is this algorithm, this new algorithm that's being developed called eGLIF. It was announced back in June by the Counter-Extremism Project, CEP. Mm. They're a New York-based nonprofit organization. Why can't they make a profit?
Wow.
You'd think there'd be so much money in extremism these days.
They also sound very serious.
But they are. They track extremist groups. Oh. eGLIF uses so-called hashing technology to assign a unique fingerprint to images, videos, and audio that have already been flagged as extremist. I don't know who gets to flag these things. Who flags things as extremist? They automatically remove any versions that have been uploaded to a social network of extremist material. It can also automatically delete other versions as soon as users attempt to upload them. So imagine the spread of ISIS propaganda online being able to be prevented and stopped. Facebook, Twitter, Google, if they use this eGLIF technology, they can nip this thing in the bud, and as soon as somebody posts something, it disappears. It never happens. Now, Mark Wallace is the CEO of this organization, and he's a former ambassador to the UN under President George W. Bush. And he describes eGLIF as a game changer. Of course, he's the CEO, so he would describe it that way. He believes the algorithm, if adopted widely, could help stem the spread of terrorist propaganda and dissuade radical groups from posting extremist content in the first place. Listen to this. If an extremist group knows that the moment they try to post a video online, that it will be immediately removed and it won't have that viral reach, perhaps it's no longer compelling for them because they can no longer accomplish their propaganda aims. It's that simple, huh? You just have to keep it from showing up on the net, and they're going to say, you know what, guys? This terrorism thing is not working for us. Let's try something else. Let's have a bake sale or just a petition. Let's do that. Yeah, and come on, this is the height of naivete. If somebody does something like this, if they make an extremist video and it doesn't take the first time, if it's flagged or something, they'll figure out a way around it. There are so many ways to get around these things, and there's always going to be more ways to get around it than there are ways to contain it.
And also, it's basically scattershot. And you know how often people get things flagged on YouTube as copyright infringement that aren't. You know how often things get flagged off of Tumblr, SoundCloud, whatever other services are out there that use automatic algorithms like this to identify what they think mm-hmm. is copyright infringing. And so if we're going to apply the same precision to extremist terrorist materials, then a lot of people are in trouble because a lot of non quote unquote extreme stuff is also going to get caught in the crossfire. But also, one of the things I really like about extremist material online is you can read it, you can judge it honestly, you can mm-hmm. see how full of crap people are before you decide they're the bad guys. That's, you know, I'm not into censorship. I'm into letting people just talk about what they're about and show everyone how stupid it is.
And think about it. We're talking about extremism now. That's mm-hmm. always how it begins.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if you can flag a video for having extremist content, you can flag all videos of kittens falling off of chairs. Now, think about that. Think about that. The motion is similar. You can definitely detect it. And imagine a world where if you post a video of a kitten falling off a chair, it's immediately prevented from being seen by anybody. That's not a world I want to live in.
Indeed, it's not.
Bernie, what do you think? Bernie doesn't think anything, okay?
Did we lose him?
Why don't you check that with the magical technology we have to replace our phone line?
I think there's a lot of parallels for photography and a lot of what we've talked about. I don't want to get into the whole kitty pics discussion, but I think there are parallels. When you start saying, okay, this type of image isn't allowed, we're just going to get all flesh colors off of the internet, you then all of a sudden have a very small internet, and also you take a lot of other imagery with what you deem unfit for your quote-unquote decent community standards.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
So, and it's just, to me, as an artist, that's a chilling effect right there on expression, and I feel like it's the same kind of scope creep. Very, very similar.
Mm-hmm. Rob, did you determine if Bernie is still with us?
The call is in progress still, so...
I'm here.
Did you wander away from the phone, Bernie?
I think there was a kinked wire at my end. We were talking about censorship, and is that the idea world we want to live in? You're uh-huh. right. You know, as soon as the powers that be, the controller infrastructure, build systems to crack any particular type of content and shut it down, it's a slippery slope. It can be applied to anything, and it will be applied to more things. You can bet your bippy that after ISIS videos are automatically taken down by algorithms, it'll be the next thing and the next thing and next thing and then next. It'll be your content. And our dictators of yore would have gone crazy over having this much power just to censor information. But like you said, there are always more ways around censorship than there are to have it. But I don't think people should have to worry about this stuff and should be able to. I think ideas, no matter how bad they are, should be out in the public marketplace. And like Rob says, everybody should see how awful and ludicrous some of this terrorist stuff is. And it would give itself a bigger black eye than if it was censored. So that's how I think.
Yeah, you know, if the only thing that people need to get recruited into a terrorist organization is to see a video made by a terrorist organization, that's, you know, the problem is a lot deeper than the material that's out there. You have to ask, why are people so easily convinced to join up and be a part of these things? That's something to address. That's something I think we like to avoid.
Yeah, you want to look at the roots and what kinds of things are creating circumstances for these things to become popular. And I mean, I also am really critical of these mediums, like platforms regulating this stuff, because when you really think about it, ideas and stuff aren't going to be kept back because it's not easy or a platform is inconvenient. I mean, when we actually do operations in other countries, we throw leaflets out. I mean, that's as old school as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
for psychological operations and so on. So, I mean, there's plenty of ways this kind of sentiment can get around, and I think it's really about unity and cohesion against the conditions that are creating the upset.
Now, here's another form of wishful thinking and control. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi is urging GOP leaders to renounce using hacked Democratic emails as campaign weapons ahead of November's elections. In a letter sent on Tuesday to Speaker Paul Ryan, Pelosi said the infiltration of computer systems within the Democratic National Committee and Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, hacking linked to Russian intelligence, marks an unprecedented assault on the sanctity of our democratic process. She called on Democrats and Republicans to join forces and present a united front in the face of Russia's attempts to tamper with the will of the American people. What a load of garbage this is. My God. First of all, if something is out there, something has been hacked, I don't care who hacked it, it's out there, and we can't pretend. This is like, you know, back in the day when WikiLeaks would publish something and all U.S. government employees were forbidden from seeing it, even though the whole rest of the world was able to see it, but nobody in the State Department was permitted to. It's ridiculous and fanciful thinking. And I'm even overlooking this this crazy nationalism that's somehow gotten injected into this, where we're blaming Russia. It doesn't matter. And in fact, you know, I do have something on that from Vladimir Putin, who says something actually on this subject that I found to be kind of refreshing. He claimed he doesn't know anything about the thousands of Democratic National Committee emails and documents that were procured by an unknown hacker and posted by WikiLeaks earlier this year. But the Russian president added there's no need to distract the public's attention from the essence of the problem by raising some minor issues connected with the search for who did it. But I don't know anything about it, and on a state level, Russia has never done this. He said it's a bit of a public service to release this information, and I got to say, I agree with that. I think it is a public service to see what people in public service are saying. And once that's out there, we can judge them based on what they're actually doing. And yeah, if you want to find out where the security holes are, I think that's really what the focus should be on. Not so much who did it, but how did it happen and how do we prevent it from happening again? But in the meantime, learn from what's been revealed, because you can't unreveal it.
Absolutely. I mean, like you said, I mean, it's funny that I'm agreeing with something that Putin announced, but yeah, it is a public service. And I guess, you know, Putin, like a stop clock is right twice a day. Every so often he says something that is maybe applicable in the real world. But yeah, and it's a public service, and it's just ludicrous and doublethink and all sorts of craziness to think that if something's out there in the public sphere, people are just going to agree not to look at it or to pretend it's not there, mm-hmm. put their fingers in their ears and go la la la.
Yeah, now, of course, the DNC hack is something completely different from the Hillary Clinton emails that we can't ever seem to hear enough of. Another story concerning that has to do with hacking of email that passed through Hillary Clinton's server. Hostile foreign actors successfully, and listen carefully, they successfully gained access to several email accounts Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton regularly contacted on her unsecured email server while she served as Secretary of State. So they're not saying that anybody got into her server. They're saying that people she emailed from her server, they got hacked somehow. So it's got absolutely nothing to do. Maybe she was emailing them on the server she was supposed to be using. Maybe that's the server that was compromised.
What made her server insecure again? I missed that.
That's the thing. Yeah, good point there. Her unsecured email server. Unauthorized, perhaps.
Yeah.
Unsecured. Well, here's something they do say, which is kind of interesting.
I think she had more control, arguably, but whatever.
Yeah, you would think so. ClintonEmail.com is her email server. FBI investigators found that the domain did not have an SSL certificate, which left it potentially vulnerable to compromise. Okay, first of all, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I could be wrong. I could be wrong on this. But an SSL certificate is what you use for secure web browsing if you're connecting to a website.
For the session.
It's got nothing to do with sending email from one machine to another. That's not the kind of encryption you should be or you would be using in that particular situation. Am I incorrect on that?
You're correct on that.
All right. So it's kind of a misnomer to say that because her website didn't have an SSL certificate that her email was potentially vulnerable to compromise. That is what the FBI said. I'm not sure they quite understand what it is that that is actually going on here. But FBI investigation determined hundreds of emails classified confidential during the state Freedom of Information Act process were sent or received by Clinton on occasions while outside the continental United States. What I found interesting about that was hearing the news stories about this and how they were marked confidential by putting a C inside of parentheses. And to me, that means copyright. That doesn't mean confidential.
Yeah.
That's... Confidential means confidential.
I think S in parentheses is a signature.
Is that what that means? I don't know these things. I'd be as hot water as she is.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple abbreviations that are... I know for e-signature, I think that's illegal. An S or... I don't know. There's a couple different abbreviations. They have different purposes, but maybe she wasn't wearing her eyeglasses.
Well, I don't know. The point is, this was not an issue a year ago. Suddenly, it's turned into an issue now because people like Benghazi, they just cannot let go of it, and they say it enough times. And now we're talking about this as if it is an actual scandal, when I don't really see it as an actual scandal. Maybe she was supposed to use some other method, but she was doing her job. She was communicating the way she was supposed to communicate. There's no smoking gun here about how she was stealing money or anything like that, or ripping people off. All things that Donald Trump is hiding, and he seems to be getting a free pass now. This is a guy who has not released his tax returns, despite every presidential candidate having done that over the past however many decades. And somehow that's just being swept under the rug. You know, how about we're talking about information being revealed and out there. If that information is revealed and out there, shouldn't that be shared as well? And shouldn't that be obtained one way or another? Guccifer 3.0, if you're out there, this is what we need. We need somebody to get in and get these returns. Donald Trump is saying he can release his tax returns immediately if he wanted to. Doesn't want to. Doesn't want to share that information. Doesn't want us to see what's in there. And wants to instead point the finger at something that, okay, maybe there is some impropriety. Maybe there is. Sure, why not? I don't trust Hillary Clinton particularly, but compared to the things he's up to, the things he's not revealing, and the things we're not talking about, it's really hard to even compare.
Yeah, and you know, I consider very, very many of the things that this guy says to be extremist in my estimation. So could you imagine if we weren't allowed to see any of this?
Yeah, imagine that.
I heard there's a lot of different copies of them, so I hope he's taking care of how easy it is to get them.
What, his tax returns?
Yeah, I'm sure there's. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of different people that have access to it.
Well, I want to know who does have access, who can get access. Any employee of the IRS? Can any employee just call up something and get this? I mean, you know, well, it probably won't be any bail, but we'll raise funds somehow for your defense.
They can't all work for Trump.
All I'm saying is, if somebody were to do this, would this be considered a crime? Obviously, in the authorities' eyes, it would be, but morally, would that be a crime to get this information? We're entitled to.
Certainly not to publish it. Uh-huh. I don't think publishing it would be an issue. I think the dirty work of actually acquiring it or being gifted this information may be a different story, but I think that would be irrelevant after it's published, so who cares?
Mm-hmm. Bernie, what do you think?
Well, I just don't think that Donald Trump's tax returns are going to yield any huge surprises. I think we're going to realize he's a schemer, and that'll be that. But I think there should be just complete requirements that the presidential candidates release all kinds of information about themselves as a mandatory thing. Just we need to know who we're voting on, and not just the two big parties. I think all the parties, you know, who have a presidential candidate in the ring should just show us who these people are. And hey, the rest of us are all getting doxxed by credit rating agencies, and our information is being bought and sold like so many baseball cards. So why not our presidential candidates and other political candidates?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, especially if the guy says he has nothing to hide, right? Then if you release this information, then it's not against his will, apparently, because he has nothing to hide. Yeah, I know I'm stretching it a bit, but it's just annoying to me to see what people can get away with and what they can do. So that's something that that I'd like to see some movement on. I'd like to see people challenging a bit more. I just get this sense that, especially in light of the polls released yesterday that show this guy ahead,
yeah.
I sense this kind of resignation that, oh, yeah, this is what we're going to get, and it doesn't really make a difference. It makes a huge difference, folks, no matter how much you dislike the other candidate. You cannot in any scenario believe that having somebody who is completely unqualified in a position like that would be better in any sense. My mind is boggled by that.
Yeah, the acquiescing and just allowing it to occur and being, as you said, resigned is it's pitiful. Mm-hmm. And really, we are all quite powerful, and I think that's the misnomer. People feel as though they do not have power as individuals or collectively, or they cannot channel all of that, which isn't true. I think it's really about getting organized and really opening a lot of these things wide open, and really weighing what the cost and benefit of this political season is going to really be. I think a lot of people have already determined where they sit with that, but it's time to really get serious. For
individuals
sure.
have power. Every individual has power, and we all can contribute in one way or another. So I want to see what people are able to do, able to contribute, whether it's dissent, whether it's disruption, whether it's revelation. You know, we have to band together, despite our disagreements, despite our mistrust of one another. We do have to see what the common threat is. And just seeing the way the news has been going over the past couple of weeks and the way public opinion has been going, it's scary. It's scary, and I just wonder where we would be in a year if we didn't do something. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to take phone calls. Everything set up, Kyle?
Yeah.
All right. Kyle is somehow able to wire this board to take phone calls, and we hope it works. We'll see if it works. Our special phone number for this program only, for only this show, is 331-223-WBAI. That's 331-223-9224. Don't call that number after the show because it won't work. It only reaches the radio waves while Off the Hook is on the air because, well, we're wizards with phones and wires and things like that.
It's not our first day.
No, it's not our first day. Absolutely not. It's our first day at this time, but it's we've been on the air since 1988. Bernie, anything you'd like to add before the first call comes in?
No, I'm just really happy that Kyle devised this this weird cell phone interface thing for the mixing board there at the studio, and so we can take calls on like practically on the other show, unfortunately, but we're working on it. So WBI can have real phone lines back.
Okay,
thanks,
well, we have a phone call. Let's answer this phone call. You know what? I hit the button wrong on this stupid phone, and
just be careful you don't mute it.
There's nobody there.
That foiled us at one point.
Yeah, you know, if you touch things on smartphones the wrong way, all kinds of horrible things happen. I just bought something. Wow. Okay, I'm sorry. 331-223-9224, 331-223-WBAI. Sorry for the person. I don't know if I hung up on you or transferred you someplace. Please call that number. If you get voicemail, hang up and don't leave a message. No one's going to listen to it. But hang up and call back. All right, let's take this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, just speak up a little bit more.
Okay. Hi. Listen, I have to tell you guys, I love the idea of full disclosure no matter who is trying to get in the fight. However, I think you slant things a bit towards Madam Hillary. She had her hands on the official wheel of government. Whatever Trump that he did as a private citizen.
Okay, let me just stop you right there. Okay, you could insert any name of anybody, pretty much in the country, even the world, and I would slant towards them as opposed to Donald Trump. So this is not Hillary bias. This is anti-Trump bias, and I think
that's questionable. I mean, look, you know, you want to say he's unprepared. Fine, our current president
he's a menace. He's a racist. He's completely unqualified. The fact that anyone can even believe that there's any chance it won't be a complete catastrophe with him in office is just astounding to me.
Well, allow me to retort.
Go right ahead.
I don't see that. I mean, you had Harry Truman, who was basically a haberdasher from Missouri. He was a political hack who became president and did just fine. You had Kennedy, who was a novice congressman who did just fine. So you never know.
Okay, you're comparing Donald Trump to Kennedy and to Truman. I mean,
don't make that jump. I'm talking about circumstance. You're saying you don't know who Trump is. You didn't know who these guys were either.
No, I know who he is. It's not a question of circumstance. It's a question of what he has said, what he has done, what his positions. And you can look at any politician of the past, whether they're experienced or not, and they come from a realm of sanity.
Yeah, we do know where he comes from.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I think the unfortunate part, sir.
I think you're just reading a whole bunch into it, and you have a visceral dislike for him, and that's perfectly acceptable. I understand that. But name it as a visceral dislike. And that's basically all I have to say. I like the idea of full disclosure. I think that's wonderful, whoever is up there.
So do you think his tax return should be released?
Fair game.
Okay.
Absolutely fair game.
All right.
Yeah, so
I'm with that.
At that point, we agree.
Yeah, fully.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot.
I don't know. You know, I'm getting increasingly impatient, especially with people on the left who are giving Trump a pass and saying that, oh, Hillary's guilty of this. You know, somebody on the air earlier today, and it was you know, we almost drove off the road. It was so frustrating because you can point at Obama. You can point at Clinton. You can say all these things about what they have done badly. But do you really think someone like Trump in power would be doing better things? We would certainly have much, much worse things to complain about. And also, think about, it's not just about one person. It's about who that person brings in. It's about the things that change in the country over the course of 4 or 8 years. And I dare say, Obama, with all his problems, a lot has changed in 8 years that is positive. And we need to look at that and ask ourselves, what would 8 years of someone like Trump do to us?
Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, like, I'm not a big Hillary Clinton fan. I'm not a Hillary Clinton fan at all. But I think you know, out of the two choices we seem to have, she's maybe the less completely terrible one.
Yeah, I think that says it just about as well as it can be said. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Hi. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say, if you could, I'm so happy that you're going to be tracing the phone calls for WBAI, and I wish that you would trace them to the times and the producers who made those calls.
I don't know if that's exactly what we're doing.
Well,
so that we would know who made those calls, because
yes.
I know, for instance, tonight Lister will be calling London.
Yeah.
He was calling London all the time, week after week. And then also, I think the Irish... John McDonough calls Ireland sometimes.
Well, it's an Irish show. So, of course he's going to call Ireland. Of course Lister's going to call London and Jamaica and places like that. But the thing is not to get ripped off by the phone company when you do it.
Yeah, so it's definitely true that there was not an accounting method set up in advance of the system that was, whether temporary or permanent, it being set up here with long distance, it was not actually set up to have an accounting, a thorough accounting, sorry, of you know, all the different producers that are making calls, and it would be a good idea, especially for very large, very expensive calls. But in this case, and I think that what our point is, it's not necessarily the individual producer's fault. They should have that resource, just like they have a microphone to broadcast over FM. The real problem was the choice or lack thereof that was made on what company to provide that resource to the producers.
Yeah, and they had no say in that, and it's really important that we have that resource at our disposal, because that's how you have decent radio production. Thank you for that call. Yeah, I got to speak up now. There's speaking of radio production, they're making a radio play down the hall.
That's what you do at a radio station.
That's what you do at a radio. But there's this big sign saying "Quiet, we're making a radio play."
Meanwhile,
but the thing is, they're so loud, they're blowing whistles now. You can hear whistles going out over the air because they're making a radio play that they want us to be quiet for.
I thought we supported whistleblowers on the show.
We once we get this phone thing straightened out, maybe we can put up some soundproofing and put our regular board back in place. That would be so nice.
Yeah, it would be really nice, even if we picked one of these rooms and made it an actual broadcasting spaceship, as it should be.
But Bernie, just to allay producers' fears, you're not going to be hunting down people
No,
showing
that
up
is
at their,
not,
at
that's
their
like
door.
Way down on the list of priorities. So
yeah.
The main priority is like negotiate something for Verizon so they don't have, we don't, BAI doesn't have to pay $20,000 when it only should have probably had to pay $2,000 or $1,000.
It's about being.
And get the bill paid, and then get the phone lines back in the studio so this community radio station can actually accept input from the community, from callers who call the main phone line to the studio. That's the goal. This is a community radio station.
Such a dream.
It should be open to the community's phone calls.
Mm-hmm, I agree. And, you know, in this day and age, and I'm saying it now, if you can make a phone call from your house for 10 cents to London, you should not be paying $5 from the radio station. Okay, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Speak up. I think they hung up.
You know,
I think they hung up. I'm sorry to hear that.
You know what I got out of the last call is that, like, the idealism with the left supporting or not supporting Trump, is that equal to the idealism of people who give him a pass and say, you know what, he needs the chance. I'm idealistic enough to think it'll be just great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think those two idealism, that two adversarial sets of idealism are not equal.
I agree. We have a call from Bulgaria.
Greetings, folks.
Oh. Somehow I knew it would be Bobson from Bulgaria.
Hi, Bobson.
Hey, Bobson!
Well, it's been a while, because, you know,
yeah.
No phone in the studio and what have you.
No phones in the studio, you're in Bulgaria, it's nighttime and all kinds of other reasons.
I heard there was a lot of development going on in Bulgaria these days. Are there a lot of condos going up?
Condos?
Yeah, do you guys have theme parks and everything that are infiltrating, Bobson?
I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but oh well.
I'll do some more research.
Slot, yeah, well, welcome
to the club.
You mentioned
how the new time slot is good for people over there, as it's after dinner time and so on.
Yeah.
And I was thinking the new time slot is what we in Europe thought of as let's go to bed after off the hook time.
Yeah, it can't be good for you. It can't be because of an hour later now. What time is it in Bulgaria right now?
It's nearly 4 a.m. by the daylight savings measurement.
Wow. Well, you'll be losing that soon, so it'll be 3. But then again, we'll lose it too, so it'll go right back to 4.
Yeah, it's 3 a.m.-ish instead of 2 a.m.-ish when the show starts, so it's a bit of a...
Well, apart from complaining about distance and time, is there anything else that you'd like to add to the show tonight before we have to sign off?
Well, I'm happy to get the phones figured out, and I wish you good luck with the new time slot and all that.
Thank you. It's been fun so far, and the personal computer people have arrived at their new late time slot of 9 o'clock, so BAI moves a little later into the evening.
Hey, Bobson.
Okay. So what are they filling the slots that freeze up in earlier in the day with?
Well, you'll have to tune in and find out. I know we're giving the gift of life to the WBAI evening news. At 6 o'clock, so there's that, and that's good news. Bernie, I think you had a quick question for Bobson, then we have to go.
Yeah, Bobson, have you been keeping in touch with the hacker community here by watching or listening to the Hope Conference videos and audio recordings?
I can barely understand a word you're saying, Bernie. Sorry. If someone could repeat the question from the studio,
that's our new technology.
Have you listened to any talks online yet? Did you stream or otherwise get to see any part of Hope?
Not yet, because I've been traveling a bit, and it's been jet lagged and all that. So
queue up something. You can watch a couple while you're opening your mail and everything.
It's all there waiting for you, and we're leaving. So we'll be back again next week at our new time slot at 8 o'clock. Personal Computer Show is up next at their new time slot of 9 o'clock. I expect one of our listeners to forward us Donald Trump's tax return, please. Not much to ask, is it? OTH@2600.com. Have a good night.
All right. WBAI New York 99.5 FM. So it appears all of the podcasts for the Personal Computer Show are gone from the WBAI archives. I guess they don't want people to know what we've been saying because the paperwork has gone forward to sell the station. So that's what they're working on, just like I predicted. And you no longer will hear, well, for now you won't hear, you know, come on, Dr. Michio Kaku has been moved from the 9 o'clock spot, and now we've taken over as the Personal Computer Show here, September 7th, 2016, WBAI New York 99.5 FM. And here we go with no Joe today. Hanky. Yes. Hank.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original Personal Computer Show, original radio computer show. I'm Hanky in the studio with Stevie DB. And Stevie, I think that you're into conspiracy, and let me put it this way. So far as the web, as the BAI archives go, our stuff is there, but you have to navigate and find
it. Nobody can find it.
Well, you know what? When you say they took it off.
It's not there. That's what I mean.
No, it's there, except that there's a bug in the system, and they have no one to fix it, okay?
Okay,
and,
right.
And it turns out, I think there's two other shows that has the same problem. So
what other shows? You don't know? None.
I can't name them right now, but there are two other shows. But let me put it this way. Your conspiracy theory.
What theory do I have?
Selling the station.
Didn't Bertol put the paperwork through to have somebody else take over the station?
No. You know what? You know, one thing
That's what he told me.
Listen, he didn't
personally
tell you that, okay?
Yes,
he did. You have to understand that with the internet, you can find anything you want on the internet to support your position.
What are you talking about?
But you'll find that when people say things on the internet, you got to be very careful the way they parse words, the way they use the words, and sometimes they do give you the truth. But
explain it then.
But the truth is, it's clouded in the fact that they give you the rest of the truth. In other words, spoken to one of the former people on the WBAI. I said, Robert, you know what? What you said is really incorrect. He says, what part of it did I say that's untrue? I says, well, it's what you didn't say that you should have said.
No, don't change the subject.
No, wait a minute. Just because
you're talking about conspiracy. What conspiracy? That they're going to sell the station? That they want to sell the station? What is the conspiracy?
I don't want to get into it. This is a personal computer show.
Right.
And if you want to talk about conspiracy.
You want to talk about it. You brought it up.
You brought it up to introduce the show with a conspiracy theory.
What is the theory?
Stevie, I don't believe that it is true unless you can prove it.
Prove what?
I want to get into computing, okay?
Okay, do it. Don't tell me that I said
Stevie,
any conspiracy
theory.
I want
to get into computing.
Don't tell me I said anything about a conspiracy. Stevie? There is no conspiracy. This is what Bertol told me personally.
Stevie, you're going to cut my mic?
Because you interrupt
Stevie?
Me. You don't let me speak.
Stevie, this is a computer show. I want to talk about computing, okay?
Please do.
All right. There was an announcement today by Apple on their new product, and I reviewed it. I went through it carefully, and you have to read through it to find out what they really are talking about. They call this a technological innovation, and I'm scratching my head. They're saying, you know, they have made an improvement in digital photography, and how they call it? Two lens, one for wide angle, one for telephoto. And Stevie, you're a photographer.
Yeah, that's going to be a great camera.
Isn't that in a typical camera with a zoom lens that you
No. One is going to have the background and one's going to have the foreground. That's going to be great.
No. They don't have the software for that yet. They said that they hope to have it. They never said they're going to deliver it. They said in the future they will deliver it, okay? You know, you got to be careful what they say of what it can do as opposed to what they will deliver.
Doesn't it have the two lenses?
It has two lenses. Guess
right.
What? A lot of cameras have, I didn't say a lot, but there are cameras with two lenses, okay? The other thing is that they are saying, but it's going to come in four new colors. Wow. They're going to have it in gold.
No.
They're going to have it in silver. They're going to have it in rose gold, which I don't know what that color is. Probably
like
the pinkish color.
Reddish.
And then they're going to have it in black. And I'm saying, wow, what a technological innovation that is.
Oh, the colors.
But, you know, all kidding aside, I think that they have minor improvements that they made. And, you know, this is really not a major new product. It's really an incremental new product. Some of the things that they put in that is really new, you could say, is it's waterproof. So that you can use the camera down to 150 feet underwater. I'm sure that a lot of I'm sorry, you could use the phone. You know, I call it a phone because it's still a smartphone, that you can use that phone as a camera, you know, what's it, 50 meters or 150 feet. That's something new. Another thing that they're talking about that is new is, of course, the colors. And, of course, there are many people who have bought the iPhones in the past where they buy a skin to change the looks of it. So I don't think that's a big deal. And, of course, they call that new. And now, the one thing that I found that's very hard to discern what it is, okay, because I was watching the cable channels and they said, yep, there's no more 3.5 millimeter jack. That's true, but I dug deeper into the specs and Apple was not clear. On the phone itself, there is not a 3.5 millimeter jack, but they're offering an adapter to go into another part that will give you that 3.5 capability. In other words, that that earpiece capability. You know, people were complaining that they would never buy it without the 3.5 jack, so that you could have a headphone attached to it. And some people use it for other accessories. Well, they say that that 3.5 millimeter adapter is available so that you can enable that to happen. Who knows? You know what? Well, hopefully we'll get more information on it next week. But the other part of today's announcement was the Apple Watch. Now, I found that interesting because on this Apple Watch, they're saying that they have something new about it. Number one is, first of all, in the overall Apple Watch line, they dropped the $17,000 gold model. In other words, the one that's in all gold, you know what? They dropped it. But who cares? And now they have, they're called the Series 1 and Series 2. The Series 2 has GPS capability, and of course you can use it underwater, as they say. And it comes in four colors, silver, gold, rose gold, and black. Now, with the Series 1, there's no GPS capability, but they dropped the price down to $269. And they dropped the price of the Series 2, which was previously a low price of $399, down to $369. I'm thinking about these two announcements. I think most people buy a smartphone to use as a phone, and now they're expanding it where they're trying to call it a new advancement in cameras. And I know that I have a separate camera, and I find that the one of the common things in a digital camera is a zoom part of it. And you know, oh, by the way, it's 12 megapixels, and they call that a major improvement. I think they have a way to go to catch up with a regular camera. Now, while this was all going on, it masked out the fact that we had a major announcement from Samsung. And Samsung had a recall of 2.5 million units on the Galaxy 7. And I know a lot of people are concerned about it. They're upset about it. And, well, let me just tell you something about it, all right? With the Samsung, they had, you know, some of the people who made reviews on it called the best performing smartphone display ever. However, they have confirmed that there are 35 cases of the sold 2.5 million units. And there was a explosion of the battery or the burn, a fire with the battery. And however, Samsung was quick to say that they will not fix the phones, but they will replace the phones with the faulty batteries to the consumer. And they've asked all retailers, such as Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and so on, all the carriers, and Target, they have already pulled off all units in their inventory, not selling it. Unfortunately, there are some stores that are still selling it. Consumers Union was complaining that some stores were selling it, and unless I can get some verification on it, I think it would not be appropriate to name them. But if they're still selling it, I will name them next week. And in the case of Verizon, what they're saying is that if the they have a waiver that it has to be returned by on a replacement unit, they're saying, hey, forget the waiver, they will replace it with a brand new unit. So I think they're doing the right thing there. But I know that Joe, my partner Joe King, has a Samsung unit, and he was thinking of upgrading it to the 7, and he's torn. Okay. He said, you know what, I'm having problem with the Samsung 4, and he's been talking to the Samsung people, and they have this fix, they tried that, they did everything, and this and you, I don't know if it's apparent to you, but we've been getting Joe on the cell phone because he's not able to come into the studio because the studio is not ADA compliant. And I know that Stevie and myself, we always find that the voice is not, doesn't have the fidelity or clarity. And so so he says, I'm going to switch phones. And he was ready to buy the new iPhone 7. But he said he needs a jack on it. I said to him, why do you need the 3.5 millimeter jack? He says, I got a hearing aid, and a hearing aid cost me $6,000. And you think I'm going to go get a new hearing aid just because, just because they don't have it? Well, that's a tough choice, and he's going to have to figure out what to do with it. But unfortunately, people have to make a choice whether they think that it's really a new unit or just an incremental unit. I think that many of the people are calling it an incremental unit. Stevie, do you think the colors are going to be a big factor?
No, I mean, you know what? If they didn't have a color choice, what happened to that car, the Ford, and you can have any color you want as long as it's black?
Well, I think that
it's not that big of a deal.
You know why having all these colors mean? Three card Monte, it's a diversion, Well, look what we got. And if you look carefully, when you buy a smartphone, what do you really want, okay? What you really want is a phone. Unless, of course, you want to plan to use it for something else like a GPS, and you want to use it as a camera, and you want to use it as a camcorder, and you want to use it to as a data recorder. But basically, you got the phone for phone purposes, so be it as it is, okay? And but one of the things I find that people use the phone for is texting.
Oh, hold on. I'm not ready for that.
Well, wait a minute. Let me finish my comment on that, okay? And I spoke to Marty Winston, who is who contributes a segment or two with us, and one of the comments he has was that he doesn't like texting when people are driving, but he says the technology is there to stop texting, and while someone's driving, and I said, what is it? And he explained to me.